If you look at the way the steel industry has evolved, into the delta, the surge in demand has come from this, that is the growth in the infrastructure and construction sector.
Right from a journey from, say, 3 million ton to 20 million ton, this is a great jump. And this is the time for everybody for a holistic growth, inclusive growth, to reach to a level of 300 million capacity.
Coming to defense, we have so much capability and much less we are giving than our capabilities. Submarine, warships, you know, aircraft carrier. We are equipped to meet any kind of demand and very high grade. And rather, we have replaced the imports with a higher grade.
India podcast is back with episode 2, and we are going to hit the road running. I'm your host Sheetal, and that road I'm talking about is going to take us to 300 MTPA. It's certainly one of the most ambitious goals that the nation has set for itself. Scaling national steel capacity to 300 million tons per annum by 2030. That's quite something. And that's also the sort of thing that comes up with questions, right? Questions that need to be answered. For example, how does one double capacity and how does one do it responsibly? The other question that comes to my mind is, how does one align equally with global expectations and domestic demand? From the sound of it, you already know that this is the sort of conversation that needs a certain richness of perspective, depth of experience, and thought leadership. That's exactly what we bring you on this podcast today. We're going to be joined by Mr. V.R. Sharma, who is the former managing director of Jindal Steel. He is now the vice chairman of Naveen Jindal Group. And he will help us understand or put together strategy as a building block of scale. And we are happy to have him on the show today. We're also going to be joined by Mr. Sanjay Singh, who is advisor and director, strategy and external affairs at Jindal Steel. He's also former Steel Secretary of India. So we're going to look to him for some answers on this very interesting and evolving topic of readiness meeting responsibility. We are also super delighted to have Mr. Alok Sahai with us today. And he, as you know, is Secretary General, Indian Steel Association. He has that vantage position to get us an understanding of how national ambition is going to fuel and deliver global impact. Thank you so much to all three of you for joining us today.
Thank you.
Wonderful to have you here. And Mr. Sharma, I'm going to start with you because we've thrown a number out there, but it's not just a number. It's national ambition, as we called it. And I'm sure we are preparing, Jindal Steel is preparing to meet this vision, right? With a sense of purpose in a meaningful way, but also in a way that is demand linked and globally competitive. How do you see these preparations unfolding? What are we doing?
We reached to 8 million ton by 2020. And 2025, now we are at level of 13 million ton in India. And 2027, we are hopeful that we'll reach to about 18 million ton. And the final game is that by 2032, we should be 20 million ton. Now, 20 million ton of Jindal Steel Limited, right from a journey from, say, 3 million ton to 20 million ton, this is a great jump. And this is the time for everybody for a holistic growth, inclusive growth, to reach to a level of 300 million capacity.
Right. And every endeavor like this, I'm sure, Mr. Sharma, you will agree, and Mr. Singh, you as well, and Mr. Sahai, requires force multipliers, right? We're looking in the horizon to see what is that thing that can leapfrog me into a different reality altogether. And digital transformation is certainly that promise that is being held out to not just our sector, but across sectors. So it would be great to understand this idea of smart scale is new scale, right? So how is Jindal Steel using integration, digitalization, process discipline, and a few other elements to drive this scale efficiency that we are talking about? So help us understand how we are managing digital transformation in our sector.
Thank you. Now, there are two issues in it. One is when we grow from 165 million ton to 300 million ton as a country, then there'll be a huge shortage of manpower. though we are a country of 1.5 billion people, but not many engineers or technicians, they want to come to steel industry. So this is one of the major challenges what we are going to face. Now, to overcome this, we have to increase our per capita steel production. So per capita steel production means we have to reach to a level about, say, 5 to 6,000 tons per person per year capacity. Mm. So today we are at a level of, say, about 1,000 tons. So it is 5x. So how to reach to 5,000 tons per capita, the production, I mean, per person. Now, the AI is not a choice. The artificial intelligence, adaptive controls, level 2, level 3, and level 4 controls, and that is a necessity. So the AI has become a necessity for the industry, not only steel industry, for any metal industry or any manufacturing sector to adopt AI as fast as possible for two reasons. One, how to produce the right quality of the material, which is competitive in the world. And number two is how to meet out the overall shortage of manpower. Because when we have the AI, then we definitely we predict and we adapt some of the factors which are essentially required to be managed by people. And when we do this, then definitely our productivity will also increase. We can also increase and enhance our production quality, and we can be competitive. We can control the cost. We can bring down the overall manufacturing cost in the country. And this is a proximity effect. When one company adapts AI, it immediately spreads to their other organizations. So we learn from each other. And the steel industry is having a very cohesive manpower. And like my friend, Mr. Sahai, he's heading this India Steel Association. So we have an umbrella ISA, and we interact that what is happening, what is going on in the country, what kind of artificial intelligence has already been implemented, what kind of level 2, level 3, level 4 controls are implemented, and how we adapt to these changes. Mm. So I think this is a necessity, and the industry will overcome into it.
Right. Yeah. I'm sure you have some thoughts as well, because everyone's talking about AI and its transformative potential, demographic dividend. Mr. Sharma spoke about, you know, people and upskilling people, those being two priority areas as well. Would love to hear your thoughts.
Like, you know, in case of ISA, we identified this as one of the most important tool right now. And when it comes to, rightly told by Mr. Sharma, if we have to scale up, we need, you know, AI. This time we arrange every year one conclave, and all the important issues we discuss there. And this time we have brought in a lot of AI people as a separate session. Hmm. And the whole process control, how we improve productivity, how we bring in, you know, better controls, how to reduce carbon content, how to improve productivity. Everything is in one, you know, through AI right. implementation we can achieve. And we want everyone to share that experience and get global technology here. Yeah. So that's what this time we are introducing. And I hope it will pay dividend in better adaptation by all.
Absolutely. And, you know, Mr. Singh, I wanted to ask you, because you, as former Steel Secretary of India and current strategy head at Jindal Steel, have seen the national steel agenda evolve from both sides. That's quite a vantage position, really. And we are talking over here about, from what I hear, right, when you talk about adoption of AI, upskilling people, embracing the idea of new scale, it's a shift. It's a cultural mindset shift. But what are some of the other bigger shifts that are required if we are to ensure that 300 MTPA just doesn't get into the history books of the steel industry, but then turns out to be this very balanced and very sustainable national achievement that we can all be proud of?
Let me put it in perspective. 300 million ton is a target which is in front of us immediately. But a larger target is 500 million tons. We are on the path of Viksit Bharat. And Viksit Bharat means that we should have the kind of infrastructure which is prevalent, which exists in developed countries. So with that in perspective, the government of India, it embarked on large-scale investment in infrastructure and the construction projects. Annually, government is spending to the tune of 21 lakh crore annually on infrastructure and construction. I'm talking about state and center both. And if you look at the way the steel industry has evolved, into the delta, the surge in demand has come from this aspect. That is the growth in the infrastructure and construction sector. You see, 10 years back, our demand, our consumption in the country was 75 million tons. Right. This year it was 156 million tons in 10 years. So it's on account of government spending, number one. And so, secondly, the manner in which we are growing. We are the fastest growing large economies in the world. Growing at 7.1%, in immediate future, we also grew by 8%. The demand elasticity of steel to GDP growth is 1.6, 1.7. Meaning thereby, for 1% increase in GDP, demand goes up by 1.6 to 1.7 times. So that's the kind of phase we are passing through. I'm talking about the India as such. We are in that phase of development. So I'm pretty certain that 300 million tons is achievable. Up after that, even 500 million tons is also achievable. Why this 500 billion ton target has, from where it has come? When we look at the numbers in terms of the per capita consumption of steel world over among the developed countries, it's in excess of 300 kilos per capita. We are right now around 100 kilos per capita. So if we want to really become Viksit, we want to be a 30 trillion economy, so that this number has to go up, along with other aspects, along with our HDI has to improve significantly, and so on. So to me, according to me, this is achievable, but it is not without challenges.
Right.
Biggest challenge, one of the challenges was mentioned by Sharmaji, that's the human resource skills. I'll say this is an era of technology and skills. They are driving growth. But along with that, steel is a raw material intensive sector. Raw material is the biggest challenge. And there are two kinds of raw material. One is for which we are dependent on the outside world. And second is for which we have the raw material in abundance within the country. I'm talking about iron ore. But that is also locked. Why I'm saying locked? Our geological resource of iron ore in the country is around 33 billion tons. But out of that, only 16% we are being able to utilize. Because that is the mineable reserve which is available to steel makers through the auction process. And what does it really lead to? Like, there is scarcity of demand, scarcity of supply, more demand among the steel makers. So when the auctions are happening in the country for the iron ore, which Sharmaji would really throw more light on, the rates at which the auctions are happening, they are skyrocketing. And at that rate, steel making is not sustainable.
Right.
So that is one challenge. So what I'm hinting at, so whatever has been on account of ecological and environmental reasons, we are not being able to mine. Now, technology is developing at a tremendous pace. We have the scientific and technological prowess where we can do at a surgical kind of, with such precision, we can do mining. And exploration also, I mean, can happen with the, you were mentioning about AI and ML. I mean, it's here where it is required more.
Right.
So resource is going to be one big challenge.
Right.
And of course, in this kind of a unpredictable geopolitical world as
right.
well. So where supply chains get interrupted, so self-reliance is the key.
Mm. I think you've hit the nail on the target, really. But self-reliance, you know, speaking of that, we are on that journey. There is no doubt about that. But one of the raging debates, Mr. Singh, Mr. Sahai and Mr. Sharma, you would have been part of these debates. I think one was brewing even backstage when we were, you know, getting ready for the podcast, is about Indian Steel's ability to scale responsibly. And Mr. Singh, you shaped policy yourself, and I'm sure you have an idea of how we can embed sustainability into this growth plan that you just highlighted, challenges notwithstanding. We don't want it to just be a bolt-on, right? But we want it to be part of national steel planning itself. Is that doable? What will it take?
I'll say it's not easily doable. And first of all, there is no viable, affordable, scalable technology available at this juncture. Secondly, the transition cost is very, very high. I'm talking about for those kind of technology, which are the like green hydrogen, which is transition technology. I mean, that's not a technology which is going to be finally is going to make our blast furnaces green. Ultimately, we have to make our blast furnaces green. Government is doing a lot towards sustainability. And more needs to be done. Government came out with a green steel taxonomy. They've defined green steel. But what will a definition do unless the market is there?
Right.
So government has to create the market. So government has to play the role of not only the policy driver, but also most powerful and first consumer for green steel. What do I mean by that? They have to formulate policies. They have to provide a kind of a architecture through which public procurement of green steel gets done, and right kind of green premium is paid to the steel makers. And there are certain very, very smart kind of tools which we have to really start following. One of them is which has been last year unveiled by Government of India, that is CCTS, Carbon Credit Trading System, through which we are going to create carbon market. But you see, in time to come, carbon is going to be the trade currency of the future. Why I'm saying that? Right now, we, along with other countries, are on a spree to have free trade agreements with neighbors and with this, with their strategic partners. We recently had a trade agreement with UK, where certain commodities, certain products would be traded at no tariffs. But if it is embedded with carbon, then no trade. So this is going to be the carbon, this is going to be the currency of the future. And the sooner we really do something tangible about it, and towards that, as I mentioned, exorbitant costs is one important bottleneck. So incentives have to be provided, incentives for transition, incentives for retrofitting the steel mills, and also creation of the market.
This is what is required. I am looking to the other two speakers who are looking like they're bursting with perspective over here as well. It is a topic that demands,
topic.
You know.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
So the point here is, I agree with Sanjay ji. The CO2 is in a big issue, and how to reduce the overall CO2 footprint. Now, the point here is, it is very difficult to convert the entire steel industry into a net zero situation. But we in Jindal Steel, what we are hoping and what we are aiming, that at least 10% of our steel should be green. If we do such kind of small baby steps, 10%, then maybe 15%, 20%, then by 2070, country has to go to net zero. So though the journey is quite long, so I think in smaller steps, 10%, 15%, 20%, we can reach to that level by 2070, the entire industry, not only Jindal Steel. And the major impact is on the consumptions, basically. Today, if we see the best of the best steel mills in the world, vis-a-vis the Indian steel mills, we have a scope of at least 30 to 40% reduction in the energy consumption. So if we conserve the energy, that itself is indirectly or directly saving our CO2. And this is how we at Jindal Steel are planning that at least 10% of the steel what we produce, there should be green steel. And if we take such baby steps, then definitely the other industry will also follow. Mm-hmm. As a whole, when we reach to a level of about 300 million ton, and put together, if we produce at least 20% green steel out of 300 million ton, that means 60 million ton. So this is a huge number. Mm-hmm. If we can reach to that number, I think we have done a good job and a good journey has been covered by the industry.
Yeah. And speaking of journey and industry, and before I come to you, Mr. Sahai, saving the best questions for last. No, I'm just joking. You are stalwarts, you're luminaries in the steel industry. I thought I should just ask you a little bit about your choice of steel as your calling, because such passion can only come from people who are not just going to work for steel. It's a calling. Mr. Singh, I'll start with you. What was that decision or that pivot moment in your life when you said steel it is?
Steel is required for national building. And it's present all over. And we cannot segregate development from steel.
Right.
I mean, it's the bedrock of development.
What about you, Mr. Sahai?
I think this is the most strategic product for any nation. If you call for the mankind, Iron Age was the defining moment. Oh. Steel will remain the most important thing.
Just like you yourself, I notice how you are not separating yourself from steel as an industry. Mm. I love the way that that was answered. Mr. Sharma, I'm sure you don't separate yourself either, having spent so much of time in the sector. But tell us about your journey and a moment that really called to you personally.
You see, when I started from steel industry, that was my first job. And I found it was very wonderful, challenging, and every day there are different challenges. Mm. And today we have been facing and meeting out all these challenges in today's era, as rightly said by Sanjay ji, that government is spending lakhs of crore rupees on the infrastructure growth. When we speak infrastructure, that means railways, airports, rivers, irrigation, that means if we go into defense, then it is shipbuilding, submarines. All these activities, they consume steel. Mm-hmm. So when we have so much of steel required for the nation building, that we are part of growth and we are contributing in the overall national growth. We produce now, there are about 27 metro railways in the country. And fortunately, we are the now single source to supply them head-hardened rails. Then, Honorable Prime Minister, he has given a big thrust to the defense industry, defense sector. A lot of spending is going on. And we feel very happy when he produces steel of that grade and kind. Then railway, Indian Railway, it is one of the largest railways in the world. So we produce rails, we produce steel to produce wagons. I feel very happy. I feel glad that I am part of that growth which is happening all around us.
Yeah. Fantastic. You know, for our viewers, so many different articulations and pride in being part of a sector that is integral. Mr. Sharma has pointed out the very many different ways in which steel is part of our lives. And I think Mr. Singh as well spoke about it from an infrastructure point of view. He gave us that example some time back. And while on that subject, Mr. Sahai, I wanted to ask you, right, we've already come at some of the sectors that are emerging as key. But in terms of driving demand for the sector, which other sectors, I mean, you can talk about these as well, are actually leading the pack, if I may call it that? And what must we do to ensure we meet this next wave of consumption?
Well, thank you for the question. In Indian Steel Association, every 6 months we project what is the likely demand projection in coming 1 year or 2 years period. We do in six major segments, we do our analysis. Construction, which constitutes 64%. Railways right now are 4%. Automobile is 9%. Mm-hmm. Consumer durable, 6%. Capital goods industries accounting for about 10%, and 7% is the intermediaries. Now, obviously, 64% is the bread and butter for everyone. And that's where, you know, the entire infrastructure, entire building, construct, highway, you know, roads, everything is covered in that, including we also cover in that the construction part of the railways. We don't include the rails and the wagons and the locomotives are part of the railways. That's how we account for with the clarity, so that there's a clarity. Station development would be part of the construction. So, and in course of time, if I see up to 2030, that 64% is going to be marginally lower to 63% as per our projection with 300 million ton. And it's going to come around 60% because of completion of number of projects and so on by 2047. We call it Amrit Kal, as rightly Mr. Singh was talking about. That's the Viksit Bharat time. It will come to somewhere around 60 when the capital goods will increase. That is going to increase continuously because look at some of the industry, they are full of order for next 6 to 7 years. So India is going to expand in capital goods, no doubt about it. Intermediaries also we will expand. So both capital goods sector require very specialized kind of steel. So that will continue to grow. Infrastructure, I personally feel with the limited urban space India has, we will be constrained to make much high-rise building, much more number of high-rise building. And when you go for very high-rise building, steel is the only solution. Coming to defense, we are well equipped to meet much bigger demand. We have so much capability and much less we are giving than our capabilities. Submarine, warships, aircraft carrier, we are equipped to meet any kind of demand and very high grade. And rather, we have replaced the imports with a higher grade. And that's how I would recall, and I always take a lot of pride, that Chief of Naval Staff in one meeting, in a matter of half an hour, he instructed there and then, promulgate an order of no imports. And we achieved 96% of indigenization. So we are capable of meeting any kind of requirement. Again, in automobile sector, continuous upgradation is taking place. We are going to make 2000 MPa steel in India. So it's going to be the best steel in the world. So with adoption of better grades and with adoption of EV, even though numbers would increase, steel consumption will go down by about 1% in another 20 years, not immediately. But that will remain a focus of all the steel companies. So far as demand is concerned, I think it's going to be uniform pattern as per our estimates.
And with that, we've come to a really different part of the podcast. I have to ask you this, you're so built in steel, forged in steel, all three of you. I'm wondering if you ever considered an alternate profession. I'm going to start with you, Mr. Sharma. If you were not in steel, what totally different thing would you be doing?
Teaching. Yeah, that is my second choice, I would say.
Okay. What about you, Mr. Sahai?
Lawyer.
Okay.
I would have been a lawyer.
What about you, Mr. Singh?
I did my schooling from a scenic school. Joining the forces.
Very good.
Well, you're not joining the force, but you're enabling the forces in everything that you do over here. So that is actually quite perfect. You're almost there.
Yeah.
And one last question, and this is, we're calling it the rapid fire round, but this is where the fire is, because this question, is there one policy that you believe needs a bit of a rethink? I know you've all answered this in some form or the other, but let me start with you, Mr. Singh, having straddled both spheres.
Two things need to be embedded everywhere when we are embarking on Viksit Bharat. It is not just a growth in terms of numbers. It is growth with sustainability and growth with equity.
Right.
So these two have to be the cornerstone of whatever we are doing and whatever policy has been formulated.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Mr. Sahai?
Future of steel industry would be AI and robotics. And that has to be adopted because it's not only about productivity, it's not only about sustainability, it's also about safety. I would say tech companies have to really shift their focus to steel industry. It's a large customer base they are missing out right now.
Right. So not so much a policy, but a shift in thinking that is a need of the hour if you have to deliver. What about you, Mr. Sharma?
So if I were to decide or if I get a chance to influence government, then I would request to make a policy or formulate a policy so that we can utilize the low grade of iron ore to produce steel. And for that, we need beneficiation. We need a proper piece of land at each location. We need a policy where the government policy will support industry, will encourage industry to come forward and to convert low-grade iron ore into steel. And this is what China is already doing, because they are importing low-grade iron ore from us, from India. Low-grade or high-grade means, just for the viewers' comfort, we tell that 57% Fe contents and below is low-grade, and that can be exported as per government's policy. I would request that to stop it fully. There should not be any lower limit. The game is how to beneficiate it and how to utilize it to produce steel, even if it is 40% Fe. So if there is a policy which can come, then I'll be more than happy to contribute also in getting the policy drafted. Right. But of course, it depends on the government, how they do it.
Wonderful. As is clearly evident from the conversation with our thought leaders today, the road to 300 MTP for India is not just powered by a particular number or set of numbers. It's really going to be defined by, strategic purpose. It's going to be defined by discipline and partnership. And certainly building for scale is as much a function of people, process and policy, that last part was very important, as it is about capacity. And for all these pointers, I must thank Mr. Sharma, Mr. Sahai and Mr. Singh for showing us a way, setting us off on this road of thought, at least via a podcast, on the road to 300 MTPA. Thank you so much for watching. We'll be back soon with the Steel of India podcast series. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.